This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 19, available now worldwide. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Out of the Park Baseball 19 is available now, today, directly from Out of the Park Developments. You can get it on Steam, you can get it on Origin, and if you are an Origin Access subscriber, you can play it now today as part of that plan. Oh my goodness, Out of the Park Baseball 19, we are so excited, so proud, so happy that you can now play Out of the Park Baseball 19. This is the best version of this game that has ever been put together. So much of the feedback that we've gotten from fans has been fantastic. Out of the Park Baseball 19 is the biggest. It is the best. It has the most stuff to do, and it looks amazing, and it plays great. Yes, this is all hype, but it's true. Just go look at what people are saying about it. Don't take my word for it. Go look on our Facebook page. Go look on our forums. Go look at our Twitter. It's amazing. Go look at our YouTube page, our Twitch live streams. People are really having a blast playing Out of the Park Baseball 19. You can get it today. Again, you can get it right from our website, Out of the Park Developments. You can get it right from Steam, and you can get it from Origin, or if you are a subscriber, it's only $5 a month to Origin Access. You can play Out of the Park Baseball 19 to your heart's content. Go check it out. We are so happy. Out of the Park Baseball 19, available now, today, $39.99 across all of your favorite platforms. Go check it out. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
So we've got some news on upcoming games, a few announcements, got release dates, an important development or two related to them. We'll be discussing all those things on this episode of the Press Row Podcast. I'm Brian Weedye, Pasta Padre. With me once again, it's Rich Grisham. Rich, how's the last week treated you? Have you been able to play anything since?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Doing great. Thank you, Brian. Always great to be on. Been traveling a lot the last couple of weeks, been going places and doing things, which has been a lot of fun. Haven't been able to play a lot, but I have played some. I continue to play in the show on the treadmill. That's right now my treadmill game. I had been deep into NBA 2K, but after I got into my second season, then the show came out, and that's I'm doing okay. I'm the Mets. I player lock for the first 3 to 4 at-bats and then play the game out from the end. I'm about a week and a half ahead in the calendar of where we are in real life right now, maybe not even that far, and doing well. Relatively speaking, not as well as the Mets' overall record, although the Mets have lost 3 out of 4 recently, but after an incredibly hot start, something like that is inevitable. So that's my main thing that I've been playing, although in a moment I'll mention another game that I have been playing that's going to make you very happy. I'm going to wait until... Okay.
Well, you're talking baseball, so I want to take a moment here to talk about this fantasy draft thing we're doing.
Let's do it.
Because we haven't brought it up yet, and it'll be the subject of something in a future episode or two, where we've got 9 people involved in this. You, me, Owen Good, Paul Sporer, Uber YouTuber, Chris Jardine, Snaggle J, Sumit Sarkar, TJ Lowerman, That Sports Gamer, and Mills Gaming TV. We're all involved in this. We're drafting. We're fantasy drafting for MLB The Show, but I think TJ may end up plugging the rosters into Out of the Park Baseball and seeing what happens with it there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so we're drafting. We're through. We're into round 12 now. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take these teams, plug the rosters in. Like I said, I'm going to turn off injuries because otherwise we'd have to draft for like minor leagues.
Right.
which no, we're not going that far. And then I'm going to simulate a season with our rosters. And in theory, I think most of our teams, if not all of our teams, well, one person won't be able to make the postseason. But we're going to look at a lot of things that come from that, not just our records and who ends up winning the World Series. But I've got a whole bunch of things like team statistics, who are the statistical leaders across the league, who made the all-star teams, who won the awards. And then I'm also going to analyze who had the most kind of draft steals based on positioning and how they produced. And then who had the most or who specifically was the biggest bust as compared to draft positioning. So, I mean, like, the simulation engine should turn out. It's not like Mike Trout, I don't think, is going to be a bust because it's a simulation engine. It's not like you're playing with him, Rich, and because you can't hit.
Correct.
He's going to be terrible. So
thank you. Thank you for making that obvious statement. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, so it's interesting because you definitely see trends in how people are picking. This is something we did with Madden a couple of years ago, and it turned out to be kind of a real popular thing, especially once I published details of it on Sporting News, and it was actually a really heavily visited piece. And what we're doing is I think we learn a little bit through this about the game itself. First of all, what do we value as far as gameplay, and how do we analyze the simulation engine as far as what's going to matter the most, things of that nature. But also we see coming out of each person their own specific strategies, and how they're building a team is very different. So for me, for example, I've really leaned on defense and bullpen. And so my first few picks, Nolan Arenado, Buster Posey, Kenley Jansen, Francisco Lindor, and Andrew Miller. So, I mean, I was looking at Arenado has like a 98 in defense, and insane. Posey is great behind the plate. And, of course, I got Jansen and Andrew Miller, the two, I believe, highest rated bullpen arms in the game. And then, Rich, you went a different route where you had the number one pick, so Mike Trout was the obvious choice there.
Right.
But after that, you went heavily on starting pitching. You're the only team at this point that has a full five-man rotation filled. And that began with Zach Greinke. You have Madison Bumgarner, John Lester, Jose Quintana, and Yu Darvish as your starting five. But that leaves you... You don't even have a reliever yet. So, but I mean, everybody's going to have holes on their roster a little bit, even though there's only nine teams involved, everybody's still going to have holes. Like my biggest issue is my starting, we're kind of opposite, Rich. My starting pitching is going to be mediocre compared to everybody else's, but I'm counting on if I can get to the sixth inning, I don't think, you know, with a lead, I don't think there's going to be many teams that can overcome that. So that's my strategy. I don't have a lot of power. I was able to draft Ryan Zimmerman, who's got some pop here in one of the last rounds, Jonathan Shoup. But I really focused on defense. I have Kevin Kiermaier in center field, and he's the I believe the highest rated outfielder defensively, and he's got good speed to go along with it. So it's just really interesting to look at how people are putting teams together, who's picking who, when. And then you have Uber YouTuber at this point only has one starting pitcher pick. So maybe I'm not going to have the weakest. It's all relative, too. I mean, I'm going to have all good starting pitchers. They're just not quite to like your level. So it's going to be really interesting to me to see how this plays out, whose strategy ends up working out the most, what players emerge and overplay where they were drafted, and what players maybe their value didn't reach what people had expected.
Well, I have a very real feeling about pitching. I know that in 2018, in the real world of baseball, having a great bullpen is the key to success. Mm-hmm. I understand that. However, I also think that having the best possible starting pitching, it outweighs the bullpen over the course of a long season. Again, I'm not saying having a great bullpen isn't important. It is. You cannot win consistently if you have a bad bullpen, no matter how good you're starting pitching. But over the course of 162 games and then the playoffs, I think, especially, and I didn't take this, I would have done the same thing no matter what, but especially without injuries, having, being able to throw game after game after game, one of the better starting pitchers out every day. That's just, to me, it's like an offensive line in Madden. If I have a great offensive line, I mean, I just think that having a great offensive line is the key to success in football, in the NFL, and it translates very much to Madden, at least it does now. And, especially with just getting the pass protection, getting the run blocking, it's very much the same way in baseball in the show, and I think in Out of the Park will bear out. Starting pitching, being able to go long, being able to get 5, 6, 7 innings more often than not over the course of a season is gonna bear out. Well, we'll see. I mean, yeah, I'm not happy that I don't have a bullpen, but I feel like I can fill the bullpen a little later.
There's good. Yeah, there's still right. a lot of good relievers. They're right. just not going to be the dominant
top.
Like ones. when I have Andrew Miller in the eighth, I also have Brad Hand, who's another good closer already. So I've almost cornered the market on lefty relievers. I thought about just drafting every lefty reliever so nobody else would have one.
You know what? I mean, having a couple of lefties in the bullpen that can get lefties out is crucial, as well as having a left-handed bat. Like, one of the problems I have with my Mets in the show right now is I don't have a single left-handed pinch hitter. So there are times when you're pinch hitting where you can really use a left-handed hitter. And so that's another example of that. So, yeah, I mean, we're all going to be good. We're all going to have gaps, and it'll be fascinating to see. And by the way, I am probably the least savvy of anybody as far as knowing the details of these players. I love baseball. I know a lot about baseball, but this is a pretty serious crew of people too. So like, I would not be surprised if, even though I think my strategy is the best, which is, you know, invest heavily in starting pitching, I still may have executed poorly on the strategy with my picks. Right.
You never know.
Exactly. So,
especially now that we're into the mid rounds and going to the late rounds, I went through and did some rankings at different positions of need for myself. And my issue is I'm having trouble valuing one over the other. So each pick, I'm looking at these lists. I'm like, all right, I just want two guys out of these six eventually. And I want one more guy out of this list of eight, which are all kind of equal to me. So it's getting a little tougher to identify the guys I want, but that's kind of the fun of it too. Like, I just took Michael Fulmer to be my third starter, but I have a list of I got three guys on my list who I valued almost equally, and I'm hoping to get one more of them from in the next couple rounds. So again, it's like, I think it's also kind of interesting that in the early rounds that we had people selecting based on who they thought other people were going to pick. So like TJ, I think it was TJ who took an Orioles, Manny Machado, before Mills Gaming TV, who's an Orioles fan. So he took Machado right before Mills got to pick to make his choices. So
hold on a second. There's a flagrant example of Owen Good taking Jacob DeGrom right before me purposely.
One pick. Yeah.
And delighting in it. And that is right. after Spore, the pick right before it, took Syndergaard. So I thought, as I was waiting for my second pick, I was going to have a shot at not only executing on my strategy, which is load up on starting pitching, but also getting one of my two favorite pitchers, and Owen, especially with a dagger, but Spore, you know, also just hurts. It hurt.
I think I remember you texting me saying, all right, who's the next two best pitchers?
Yep.
Is probably who you had in mind. So a little bit of gamesmanship there. It's kind of fun.
I disagree completely with that specific one.
I'll mention one player because I know I think he was going to come up at some point during this podcast. Owen selected Shohei Ohtani for his team. Now, the good thing about that pick for Owen is that his team is a National League team. So Ohtani's going to be able to hit when he pitches, at least. But one of the disappointments with MLB The Show this year is that Sony San Diego went and got Ohtani's rights. They got his face scan in, and they got everything prepared for him to be in the game for launch. But then they didn't implement a way in which Ohtani could be used as both a pitcher and a hitter in your franchise mode. For that matter, in Diamond Dynasty. So he'll at least get him hitting on days when he pitches, but unfortunately he won't be able to. Well, he's a National League team, he won't have DH. But if he was an AL team, he wouldn't have been able to DH him. And I doubt the computer, I'm fairly certain the computer is not going to pinch hit Ohtani for anybody on his off days, unfortunately.
Indeed.
But I think there was a question also about how he's handled in out of the park, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. Our good friend Matt Piscatella asked a question about that. In fact, I'll pull it up here on Twitter. The two-way player system in the new out-of-the-park developments, how tough has Ohtani made it for the dev team to account for people wanting to try this with other players? Also, Ohtani in the show still sitting at a silver, but the card is at like 6K. So basically, Ohtani is what Matt says.
Yeah, Ohtani in Diamond Dynasty, just to hit on that last point, people are anticipating him getting a huge ratings increase with the first roster update that's going to change ratings, which I believe is the Friday the 27th. Of April. So, I mean, that's what Diamond Dynasty is all about, is people anticipating and playing the market. So that's what he's talking about there. And I suspect he will get an increase, although, I mean, he had that insane streak where I think he hit 3 home runs in 3 games or something. And then he almost threw a perfect game. But since then, he hasn't hit another home run. He only lasted 2 innings in his last start. There was some concern over a blister. So I don't know. I don't know if it's too early for them to really jack up his ratings based on what was like a one hot week, because he started, I think it was, 86 or something insane. Mm-hmm. They fixed him with their first roster update before the season even started and put him at a more reasonable, I think it was 70, high 70s, because he hadn't played yet, but he was rated higher than many established. He was at an all-star level before he even stepped on the field once, and then he had a terrible spring training. So I'm sure there's going to be an adjustment to him. I don't know if he's going to move up a tier in that first move, but yeah, I mean, a high level of interest on Ohtani. And now, as far as out of the park goes, I'm not sure how you dealt with him there.
Well, I mean, we're doing an article in the next few weeks about it, so I can't go into it too much, but I will say that obviously he's in the game, and as he has sort of performed in real life, the team's been able to watch, obviously, and make adjustments. So, but Ohtani is still, in a lot of ways, really an unknown, and will be for a while in real life and in the show and in out of the park, because, you know, he's not unique. Certainly over the course of the history of baseball, there have been guys who can pitch and hit, but certainly peculiar and kind of difficult to structure or difficult to slot into the structure of these kinds of games without getting creative. But you know, Lucas and Matt and the guys and the out of the park guys do a great job of that, and it's fun to experiment with them.
All right, so back to what you had been playing, Rich. Were you going before we went off on the tangent,
right,
on the fantasy draft thing we're doing? Was there something else you wanted to get to?
Well, I told you multiple times, I committed to you that I would play it, and I finally did. I finally played the lacrosse game.
Yeah,
Casey Powell 16 on the Xbox Games Pass. I have my Xbox One X, and I have the Games Pass, and I really enjoy it. And I fired it up, and I played a couple of games, and it's a really solid game. Like, I don't know anything about lacrosse in reality. I mean, I know what it is. I know I mean, and I've seen the basics, but I've never played. I've never attended a match. You know, there are kids in the neighborhood who play lacrosse, but, you know, my son is not one of them. So, like, I've never even seen, like, kids lacrosse or anything like that. But it's very easy to play. It looks good. You know, it looks legitimate. You know, it's a nice big field, and the players are all running around. It's the full size everything. I don't know any of the teams. When I, you know, when I got the game, it asked me if I wanted to download the highest rated, you know, team. So I said sure, and that took like a minute or two. I have no idea what I downloaded, if it's legit. I know it's a Google search away. I just, you know, off the top of my head, I don't know. But I played a couple games, and, you know, I had fun. It's kind of easy to just, you know, start to play. I don't know whatever the face off is, how to do that. But once the face off is over, the equivalent of that, you know, then you pick up the ball, and it's easy to sort of pass it, right? Use the right trigger to pass it, and you can sort of run
it. Yeah, it's natural. Right. Yeah, it feels natural.
It does, exactly. And, you know, it's sort of fun when you get a little open space and you're sprinting down the side and you find another guy. Like, but because I don't know the rules of lacrosse, I was committing a lot of these offsides of sort, and what I didn't realize.
That was one of the things I noted in my review back then. I think I may have mentioned it before, is that they don't explain the penalties.
Right.
And there were one or two different things. I'd have to look back at that review. I noted them. There were one or two different things that they would just happen. You'd get a penalty, and you really didn't know why you were called, you know, what you did to cause that to happen. So that was one of the few things that I found, you know, the game was fairly accessible, even for someone who doesn't have great knowledge of lacrosse. But the penalty thing was kind of the thing that stood out as problematic.
Yep. So they kind of assume that you know it. And I think I figured the one that I kept doing over and over again was called, I think, slow whistle offside, where I had no idea what I was doing. But eventually I sort of figured out that there are certain groups of players that can't go back on defense. Like, I'm just used to pulling back on defense when the ball goes the other way in FIFA or in the NHL. But, like, I kept being a forward, like one of the guys near the goal I'm attacking. And then if I had a turnover or something, I would then just back up. And I kept getting called. And then eventually I was just like, wait a second, is it because I'm backing up? And then I would just use the right trigger to switch into, like, one of the defensemen, or the equivalent of what a defenseman is when it was coming back my way. And those penalties stopped happening. So, again, I know a quick Google search would have told me what I was doing wrong, but I sort of even figured it out eventually just because they kept saying slow whistle offside. I'm like, okay, wait a second. I've never heard that term before, but it must mean something. Like, offside means, okay, you know, there are people where they're not supposed to be. So that's at least a clue. The slow whistle, I had no idea, but as I keep saying it out loud, I'm thinking maybe it's almost like kind of like a power play in hockey, where as long as you maintain the possession of the puck, you know, the goalie can skate off and another guy can come on until the other team touches it, and that's when the whistle blows and the power play starts. So maybe it's that. But anyway, it's a fun game. I don't think there's enough there for me to do anything other than dabble in it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't hit the create career, but I might do that. The reason I'm playing it is because the new one is now out as well. And I know there was, you know, you had posted some articles, some information about that.
Yeah, the new Casey Powell Lacrosse 18 did come out this week. It's after it had initially been announced to come out in early March or March 13th. So that game is $50, which was the same price of the first one. Now, what surprises me about this is, number one, $50 is a big ask for an unlicensed lacrosse game, right? Digital download only. That's $50 is a lot for that. And I think that was...
Is there any license in there?
No.
Okay.
No. But you can like with the first one, you'll be able to download teams and anything people have created, and they also allow for like creating stadiums and logos in this next one. That was really prohibitive to, I think, the first game's ability to reach a new audience. $50 is a big ask for that. And the price on the first one never went down. Now, it's in Xbox Game Pass, as we just talked about, so it gets credit there. But otherwise, if you wanted to buy Casey Powell Lacrosse 16, it's still $50. I checked. So I don't know what they're doing with the pricing, because this is not a good way to get people into a game that, one, they might not be sure they really want, or they might not be sure if they're going to enjoy it. And two, they should be trying to get it out to as many people as possible. It's a sport that's growing. It's a sport that's largely regional. So reaching a wider audience is difficult. And putting a price tag of it on $50 and not, you know, people not really having a lot of confidence in buying it. They didn't send out review copies. At least they didn't to me. There's currently only one review of the game, and then on Steam, there's a handful of user reviews, which are not all that positive. I don't know how the game could have gone backwards, but I don't know if it was a huge improvement. It's difficult to evaluate where this game is at right now. I think the publisher, Big Ant Studios, is almost getting a reputation now of they're putting out unlicensed sports games, but they're really unfinished. Just like they did with the AO Tennis, which was disastrous at release, and they've had to do like 15 patches for that. and it's going to release worldwide, that first release being just for New Zealand and Australia. It's going to go worldwide here in the next couple weeks or month or so. And it's just they've had a lot of trouble, and they're starting to get this reputation here that I'm not sure is going to be healthy for them going forward. But the lacrosse game is still, I mean, I can't imagine it'd be worse. It's just hard for $50, even for me, to look at it and say I would spend $50 on that, even just to review it. I don't think I could even justify that. It's unfortunate. If they release this for $30, which is something that Super Mega Baseball 2 is doing, or NBA Playgrounds is doing, then that makes a lot of sense. At least the first NBA Playgrounds was $20. I don't know if they have, I don't think they've set a price for the second one yet, but I think you gotta have a reduced price to attract people in if you don't have a major league license behind it, Rich.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to criticize their pricing strategy because they know what they're doing. They know
well,
their sales.
Well, you could say that, Rich, but how would there this be only seven? There's only seven reviews, user reviews on Steam, which to me says nobody's buying it.
Well, again, they know their numbers. It's definitely it. You know, to me, it says that they believe that they have a premium product and that a premium product carries a premium price. I mean. I'm not putting words in their mouths, but that's what that says to me.
That used to be something that mattered. Like you actually wanted to sell it at the premium price, or else it would look like the game wasn't up to the level of you know, its competitors or the other games in its genre. But in the age of free to play that we're in now, Rich, or in the age of discount digital titles, I'm not sure that works anymore.
Well, I'm not saying it does or it doesn't. It's certainly a statement, right? They're saying something by keeping their game at a $50 price. I mean, Nintendo does that. Nintendo keeps the prices of their first-party games right at the initial release for years and years and years, and they always have, right? I mean, and they make a statement by saying, look, our games are premium games. We don't discount them. We don't put them on sale. So to me, that's all that saying. I don't know if it's successful or not. I would be surprised if it's not to a degree. Otherwise, you would think that they would have, you know, been forced to put it on sale. But you know, I don't know anything about Big Ant Studios at all. You know, I haven't played the tennis game, and I doubt you said it was out. I mean, yeah, and you said
it, right. Well, not for
us. I was
us.
Like, oh wait, did I miss that? My goodness, you know. I mean, I'm certainly interested in all the new games coming out because you know I want to support everybody as well, just because it's good to see more, you know, more is better.
Well, to give you a sense of that AO tennis game when it released, GameSpot gave it a 3 out of 10 and IGN a 4.5. So those are legit publications that rated it low, and they've done a lot of post-release support. I think that's one thing we've seen with Big Ant, though, is they do support the game's post-release.
Okay.
Question will be whether, you know, there's another tennis game coming out in May.
Yeah,
that seems to be in a better place, but we don't really know for sure. But I think going in, there's confidence in it.
The Mario tennis game is coming out too.
There's that,
which is, you know, has the potential to be the best of all of them. And I don't say that as a joke because there are some Mario tennis fans out there from past. I don't know that it will or won't be, but you know, it's another thing. So, you know, it's been a long time since I've really had a lot of fun playing a tennis game. You know, I played a lot of Virtua Tennis on the Vita when it first came out, or maybe it was the PSP out. You know, I'm probably thinking of the PSP now, or I don't know. In any event, you know, I played the Top Spins, I played the Grand Slams tennis. I didn't love any of those. I didn't hate them. You know, and there's some fun to them. Like it's hard to really play, you know, legit tennis, you know, and enjoy it. Like when you're playing, you know, the matches, right? They go on for a long time, you know? So a lot of the modes will have you just play, you know, shortened matches and sets and things like that. But anyway, it's, you know, tennis is kind of in some ways a really tough video game to make a lot of fun over a long period of time. So it'll be interesting how these games are. You know, I'm certainly interested, but you know, tennis is, I don't have a, you know, a long video game love affair with tennis games like I do with a lot of other sports video games.
Yeah. You want to move on to the next topic here?
Yep.
All right. Let's see. What should we choose? Let's go with NBA Playgrounds 2, Rich.
Yeah. This is exciting. I'm glad.
It's exciting, and it's a little questionable in my mind because we're because of the times we're in right now. But NBA Playgrounds 2 officially announced it's going to release this summer, which means between some point between June 21st and September 22nd. Please do not be September. Please do not be September. We've seen a recent comeback in arcade games because of independent developers, and that, you know, that was really on a different level last year when NBA Playgrounds released because it had licensing. Most of the arcade games we've been getting don't have licensing. Yep. NBA Playgrounds had the backing of the NBA and all its players and legends. And it had issues when it released. It showed a lot of potential, and I knew going in, it only made sense that this was a long-term play for them. They weren't going to pay for the license and build up a game from scratch just to release it once. This is going to be a series that's going to be around for years. And so we're getting the sequel here 1 year after the first, and I think we'll talk about whether that's smart or not in a little bit. But it's going to have some new features, obviously. But it's tough because it's unlike the simulation games, Rich, where you know that most of them, the primary reason they sell is because of roster updates. This isn't a game where roster updates matter because all the same players will be back. This isn't a team game. This is all individuals. So roster updates, players being on new teams, what teams are on really doesn't matter here. But the game's going to have a new season mode, a new ranked online mode, and a roster of over 200 current and retired players. The first game had, I'm thinking close to 200, so I'm not sure that's going to mean a bunch of new players either, because the post-release support for the first game added over 100 players. So very interesting that they're releasing it 1 year later. I mean, it makes sense. Licensed games generally release 1 year, you know, annually. But I'm not sure how well an arcade game where roster updates really don't play a role, how well that's gonna do here. But the game, I'm excited for it because the first one showed potential, and if they refined it further, which they worked a lot on it post-release support, they did a good job doing that. But if they further refine it and reduce some of the issues, I mean, one of the things that I'm looking forward to is being able to play 2v2 online. So Rich, you and I would be able to team up, controlling our own player, yeah, and play against two other people. So there's a lot of stuff to look forward to with it too. I'm happy for it. The more games, the better, especially arcade games, which we're not seeing very much in the last decade, or at least most of them have gone away, and we've started to get them back little by little. But this is a major initiative, obviously, and it's something the NBA wants to be supportive of.
Yeah, this is nothing but good news. It makes complete sense, right? Why, if you can release a follow-up to a good game that is a better version of it, you know, with more options and perhaps stronger gameplay and more balanced you know, career modes and things like that, it makes sense to do it in an annual way. It completely makes sense. I'm sure they learned a ton from making Playgrounds, and Playgrounds 2 is gonna be better for it. And I have absolutely, I you know, I'm ready to buy a second one, because I stopped playing the first one because the difficulty spike was so bad that I just couldn't, you know, finish any of the ladder tournaments, and it went from something that was fun to frustrating. And by the time they had added in the ability for you to, like, you know, just go play your friends online, which wasn't part of the initial launch, you know, I sort of had moved on. So I think it's a great idea. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't do it, as opposed to just adding it to the existing one. You know, even though it's the, you know, a lot of the same players, you can always do different things with players and, you know, historical players and things like that. And so I'm looking forward to it. I bet you it looks and feels different than the original one. You know, there were definitely, it was fun, but it's not, I mean, the game is the modern, you know, Playgrounds is the modern day NBA Jam, but it doesn't play exactly like NBA Jam. And there were some questionable decisions with things like layups and stuff like that, and with timing, and you know, that took a lot of people a long time to get used to. So, you know, there's a lot of similarities to Jam and to Street, but it also had its own thing too. And so it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, whether this sort of gets more, you know, aligned with the more traditional ones, or whether they can continue to, you know, set themselves or differentiate themselves with some of the shots and the controls and things like that.
Do you think there's a market for an arcade game to sell annually? If someone spent 20 or 30, you know, $20 last year in NBA Playgrounds, you think there is? Okay.
I do. I mean, at least right now, and one of the reasons I say it is because the video game industry is doing really well right now. Like, there's a lot of people spending a lot of money. You know, there's people are certainly, you know, between hardware makers and platform holders and software makers, this has been a really good few months. And that's another reason I say that, because there's plenty of people that are spending money. There's a lot of good things happening economically right now in the United States, around the world. You know, there's a lot of people that have jobs and money to spend, you know, and I'm not trying to get macroeconomic, but these are just good days. So that's another reason. You know, a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, when the sales were down pretty significantly, we didn't see as many of these things too. So that plays into it. I think there's a lot of opportunity out there right now because consumers are spending. They're spending on upgraded consoles, like I recently did. You know, they're spending on subscription services. They're spending on Ultimate Team. They're spending on new games. They're spending on retro games. They're spending on multiple consoles, the Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox. There's a lot of money being, and PC. So these are good days, you know, for a lot of people. I'm not saying everybody's, you know, fat, dumb, and happy, but there's a lot of good economics flowing in the video game industry these days.
All right, so another sequel, Rich, Super Mega Baseball 2. This is one, obviously, we've been very excited about. It was basically at the top of all of our lists for most anticipated sports game of the year. We finally have a release date for it. It's been in beta on Xbox One, a closed beta, for almost a month. But it's coming out soon. It's coming out May 1st. So we're less than 2 weeks away. And this has been a long wait. It was originally going to come out in September. It got delayed, and I think that was the right decision, not just because they were able to add more features and run this beta, but it was going to come out in September, where it was going to get steamrolled by every other major league licensed game. It would have never found room to breathe there. It's got a chance now here in at the start of May. Baseball season is upon us. Mm-hmm. MLB The Show is, you know, not fresh. It's, you know, it's been out for a month and a half. So at that point, so we also got the price, $30. That's $10 more than the first one was sold for. But this game has online play. It has a bunch of more features, and it's definitely looking a lot better. And they're also even going to put out downloadable content for it, optional cosmetic stuff. It's going to come out on the same date. What do you think, Rich?
I can't wait. Loved Super Mega Baseball, had a lot of fun playing it. And it's been a while, and it's a great time. Like I said, it's baseball season. It's May, spring. A lot of people getting outside. Finally, it's been a brutal winter here on the East Coast, just never ending. I was in Minnesota today, Brian. It was snowing.
Yeah.
Snowing in Minnesota today in late April. So, yeah, I can't wait. I hope that this is going to work out great for them. I hope the game is amazing. I hope everybody buys it, and I hope that all the guys at Metalhead, you know, who are, you know, friends of the show, we've had them on multiple times, and you know, good guys, and we're happy for them, and I just hope the game is awesome, and I expect it to be.
There's a lot of really cool things to look forward to as far as the customization. They're bringing in a lot of customization for this one. The ability to play online pretty much anything cooperatively or competitively. So we could be running a season, Rich, where you join me to play with me or against me in that season.
That's
pretty
so
cool stuff.
That's great.
Pretty awesome. Xbox One X and PS4 Pro will see enhancements, so
nice.
You'll get to see that. I'm going to get it for the Xbox.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. I've got my Xbox One X, and it, with the exception of any exclusives, I'm pretty much all on Xbox now.
Yeah, I kind of am, too, now that you mention it, because it is kind of the best version of all the multi-platforms, so why not, right?
Yep.
That's what I just got Far Cry 5 for, was for the Xbox One X, and wow.
Whew. Yeah.
You want to talk about a game that looks amazing. My goodness.
How are you liking that 4K gaming?
I love it. It's great. I'm just so happy because all the games look so good. You know, I don't know the technical jargon at all. I just, you know, it's so fun to turn on this nice new TV and play games in 4K. I don't even care about like watching stuff or movies or anything. It's just the games look so great. It's wonderful. I'm glad I did it. And if anybody, if you can afford to do it, just go ahead and do it if you haven't already. It really is, relatively speaking, worth it for what you can experience.
And it's not that much of an investment. I mean, the you can get a good, pretty good 4K TV like the one you got, Rich, for what was $300 bucks.
Yeah, less than 400.
I found the deal.
Yep,
I found
absolutely.
That deal on.
Yes, you did.
Didn't have to. Yeah, you didn't have to spend on it.
Right.
You got it. But I mean, that's a very good TV for in that 300 to 400 range.
And it's, you know, I'm also like I never really had a true smart TV. So not only does it look great, you know, it's got three HDMI inputs. So I got my PS4, my Switch, and my Xbox One X all plugged into individual ones. And it lets you, you know, define, oh, go to the Xbox, go to the Switch. But also it's got a bunch of apps on it, so I, you know, configure my MLB.tv so I can watch all that, my NHL.tv so I can watch all those games too. It's great. It's just such a wonderful new way to experience, you know, entertainment and sports. I love it for that reason too. It's great.
Finally, Rich, let's get to a topic that's probably a sensitive one, or at least it's a disappointing one for fans of Pro Evolution Soccer. Konami and PES is it's no longer going to have the UEFA license, and that means no Champions League, no Europa League. It's really unfortunate because Pro Evolution Soccer is already at a large deficit compared to its competition, EA Sports FIFA. It deals with having far fewer licenses for clubs and tournaments. And this was a big selling point, having this exclusively in the series. They've had it for a decade, and now it's going away. And I think most likely that means FIFA is going to be picking it up, because I can't imagine why they wouldn't want to be involved in one of the two major soccer games. So it's damaging to the game. I knew you were going to make this argument, Rich, because it doesn't matter to you.
No, not at all.
This is not fixable. Not having these licenses is not fixable, especially when you're trying to sell the game. And I think I saw it's like sales wise, it's dwarfed by FIFA.
Of course.
And Pro Evolution has been arguably the better playing game in recent years, but it hasn't been able to gain ground because of that. I think mostly, large part, licensing, or large part being just people go where more people are, especially when the Ultimate Team mode is so popular. You want to be where millions of people are, and where all your friends are. But also the licensing hurts. And I know you downloaded stuff on PS4, Rich. You can't even do that on Xbox One. You can't download creations and stuff like you can on the PS4. So you have a bit of leeway there, but This hurts. This hurts Pro Evolution Soccer. It's not a death blow. They're apparently continuing to develop the game and will release one next year. But I think you have to look at Konami's history here. If they're cost cutting on Pro Evolution Soccer and they really would prefer just to have mobile games and casino games, And the Pro Evolution Soccer mobile game is huge. I think there's reason for concern in the years going in the years ahead that they may continue to cost cut here or eventually eliminate the series if, you know, if it doesn't pick up. It's going to be hard for the series to pick up without licensing. I think that's where you have to look at as far as what kind of potential does it have to grow, or can it even sustain the level it's been at without licenses to sell itself against the competition?
Okay, well, a lot to unpack here, but here's the bottom line. Losing the UEFA Champions League and Europa League license is a good thing for Pro Evolution.
Oh, why are you going with this one?
It's a good thing. And the reason it's a good thing is I don't think that they had any additional sales because they had the Champions League decal and the Europa League decal. And let's be frank, that's all that was. It was graphics. They didn't have many of the actual stadiums. Most of the teams are not licensed. It was completely just, it was such a bizarre thing for FIFA to have everything licensed except that, and for Pro Evo to have none of the licensed leagues, but have somehow the Champions League, which is not even a real league. It's a tournament of all of the best club teams in Europe, which is an amazing tournament. It's, you know, by far the most revenue generating tournament. Clubs that get into it and then can advance in it are far more richer than clubs who don't. I mean, I'm not trying to say that the Champions League isn't very, very important. It is. I'm just saying it was a weird thing to be in there in the first place. I play tons of Master League where the Champions League and Europa are embedded, and I played in the Europa League tournaments in my Master League as Everton because they were in Europa this year, and they got bounced early because they had a terrible year. It just doesn't have an impact for sales and much of an impact in the actual game itself. I'm sure the license is very expensive, and I guarantee you the money that they are not going to have to spend on something that has very little to zero impact on sales is going to be much better allocated towards things that will make the game even better. I always fear for Pro Evolution. We talk about it every year, Brian. I'm always so happy when they confirm there's a new Pro Evo because it is dwarfed by FIFA. But I have talked to guys on the team over the years, and by no means do I have any like direct ties or anything like that. But you know, the word profitable was used a couple of times. Pro Evo has, the reason it exists is because it is profitable, and it is profitable. Its business model must work, and not having the Champions League to me is actually a good thing for all the reasons I just said. I'm not being contrarian, Brian. I'm looking at this from a dollars and cents standpoint. For something to be profitable, if you're paying, who knows how much the license is? I have no idea, but I guarantee you it is not cheap. Mm. It is. There's no way it's cheap.
So, I think it's easy for us to look at it and say, well, that's not that important, but we don't live in Europe.
I didn't say it wasn't important. I said it's a weird thing for that to be the one licensed thing in Pro Evo. It almost doesn't make sense. That's right. What I'm saying. If for whatever reason, it just, like I said, it felt sort of odd and bizarre, and I really don't think that very many people bought or did not buy Pro Evolution because it had the UEFA license. That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Okay. I think, right. Okay. So I don't know if that's true because, like I just said, we don't live in Europe. I don't know how critical that those things are to the way people perceive the games, and if they, you know, if those are important enough that they look and compare the two games and say, well, this is why I would prefer this or another. You're probably right, because Pro Evolution does not have an advantage in many areas of licensing. They have a few partnerships with certain clubs, which gives them extra access and things like that. But really, FIFA wins in licensing almost across the board.
Right. Yeah.
But I think you have to also look at things like, well, without, it's not just the game having it, Rich. It's like the promotion that the series gets around the event. So at Champions League, there's going to be banners for Pro Evolution Soccer. There's advertisements for it, okay. Right? You have the connection between the two.
Yeah.
And so it becomes a relevancy thing, a legitimacy thing. And if FIFA just shows up everywhere all the time, it's hard for a secondary game like Pro Evolution to make many waves without those kind of connections, I think. And
that's fair. I mean, okay. That's a legitimate point. You know, if that is the case, I did not know that was the case, but you know, that's expensive real estate to have your video game banner hanging around at some Champions League matches. So that'll definitely hurt. You know, we won't know because Konami would never say impact it has or mm-hmm. will have on sales or what the business model of it is. But, you know, as we've talked about, Konami is mostly out of the console video game business, not completely, but mostly out. And so, you know, every year that Pro Evo even exists to me is a good thing. And if losing the Champions League and Europa League licenses helps make it continue to exist, I'm fine with it. And again, as someone who plays Pro Evo every year and loves the game and plays the Master League, which has this stuff in it, to me personally, there's no impact. No impact to me. I'm not any less inclined to buy the game. And again, I know we're talking about me, and I'm not saying that anyone else does or should feel that way, but I'm at least a consumer of theirs, right? I buy the game every year outright. And to me personally, it doesn't negatively impact my experience in the Master League.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. I think it's going to be difficult for Pro Evolution Soccer if FIFA just has everything and Pro Evolution Soccer loses some of the things that people maybe have come to like about it. Mm-hmm. Then it's the focus on, I just look at that mobile game being so huge and thinking, well, is this a cost? Like you don't seem to think it's as much a cost cutting measure as you think it's just maybe a refocusing of what they want to do with it.
Yeah.
That's your perspective on it. Mine would, and I think a lot of other people might look at it and say, well, they don't want to spend the money because they're not invested in the series the way they used to be.
I mean, who knows?
It's hard to say.
Maybe UEFA, you know, asked for a 75% increase too. I mean, like maybe they were like, oh, we would have been fine paying what we were. I mean, we don't know any of this stuff, or maybe EA, and who knows? I mean, here's the other thing, Brian. I'm not saying, like, I'm not, my initial gut reaction is, oh, FIFA's going to snap up the Champions League license. I'm not so sure about that. I don't know what EA gets other than added legitimacy of having the Champions League logo and stuff like that, because it doesn't dramatically change. I mean, I guess they could work Champions League stuff into Ultimate Team.
I mean, sure.
For the most part, you know, it's Ultimate Team is what would be important. So you could see an announcement like the day after the contract expires that it's EA, but I also wouldn't be shocked if FIFA doesn't get it either, because I don't know how much the investment of the license would be versus, you know, what the potential upside revenue mm-hmm. revenue is. Because again, for all the people that I'm saying with no facts whatsoever, no quantitative data, I'm suggesting that, or I'm not suggesting, I'm stating that, you know, the UEFA license probably had zero impact on sales of Pro Evo. If FIFA all of a sudden gets the Champions League, is that going to increase sales by 5%, 10%, 50%?
Well,
probably not.
I don't think. Well, there have been instances where companies obtain licenses more for the purpose of taking it away from somebody else,
right.
than for the benefit they see directly to themselves. And that could be the case here too, where EA is like, well, let's snatch this up. That's going to damage the competitor more than it's going to help us.
Sure. That's a legitimate tactic. I mean, I don't know if EA wants to kill Pro Evo or if
I don't know if they care. FIFA's big enough as it is.
That's my point. Like it might not that, and that's again, might be, do they even have to do it as that kind of a move? I mean, in one hand you could say, yeah, you know, you're trying to win the competition. You pull out every stop possible. And the other, it's like, yeah, would it really matter? It'll be interesting to see. Like I said, I'm just not going to sit here and tell you for sure FIFA is definitely snapping it up. I wouldn't be shocked if the Champions League just isn't licensed by anybody.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode, Rich. Thank you, Mr. Grisham, for coming on, chatting about some of the new stuff that's coming down the line here.
These are good days. These are good days. Lots of new stuff coming out. This is what we wanted. This is what everybody says they wanted. Go buy these games, or at least give them a fair shot. All these new games coming out. You know, we always get tweets on, you know, what happened to this? What happened to that? Well, these are good days for video games. Help these guys out. Yeah. The Super Mega Baseball guys, the Playgrounds guys, the lacrosse guys.
Tennis, lacrosse,
give them a chance. I'm not saying just blindly go buy them, but give some of these games a chance. Who knows? You might really enjoy them. I know I'm going to.
Yeah, so we got all those, and that's in between now and when the big, you know, the Maddens and the NBA 2Ks and the FIFAs of the world's released. So we got summer to do that, and we got E3 coming in June, where, of course, every, you know, huge stuff will come out of that. And, but we'll have the opportunity to play some games from independent developers and some, you know, different style of games than we're traditionally getting. So that's always a good thing, and that's something we've, you know, cherished here the last couple of years as we started to see that coming together more. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, thank you again, Rich. We will be back with another episode next week. We'll, you know, probably the day of, we'll decide what that's going to be about. but yeah, until then, everybody, thank you for listening. Take care. Till next time.